We're both pro yeah. podcasters.
Yeah.
Thank you for your patience, Jamie Kirk.
No worries.
Appreciate it. We are recording, just so you know. So you can stop. You can stop saying the slurs now.
I don't know if I've got them all out.
I'm not ready to start.
My body feels heavy, and not because I'm severely overweight, but
it's heavy with bigotry.
Yeah, it's just like I can't see any fat on your body.
It's heavy with ironic racism. All right, so this is great. This is you are the fine. I've collected them all. I've collected all the hosts of the Community Notice Board podcast. Finally,
we're here.
Yeah.
You got Ned Flanders' ass, Alex White. Listening to music with shouting in it. And then me and Drew, who are kind of the same little guy. Yeah.
yeah, two versions of the same guy.
Well, that's like, we went to see Seosin last year. Mm-hmm. And like, it's amazing, the audience. Like, you just walk in, me and Drew look fairly similar. He's a bit shorter, I'm a bit wider. But every guy, you're like, that's Jamie, that's true, that's Jamie, right. that's true. All guys in black t-shirts with beards who are a little long in the tooth.
And he rocked up in the Thursday shirt as The Falling Dove or
I had
it
to
is,
rock up in the Thursday shirt for a hardcore podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
I guess Thursday, a post-hardcore.
You're the Jeff Rickley of the Sydney comedy scene.
I mean, I wish.
let me give you an intro for people listening. So I'm here with Jamie Kirk, as I said, the third co-host and arguably best co-host of the Community Notice Board.
I think that's Alex.
You reckon he's the best?
Yeah. I'm the middle.
I was told that you do fall asleep during records.
What? I've never fallen asleep during
Drew
a record.
Drew threw you under the bus.
That's not true. True. I mean, Drew has told some really fucking boring stories over the year, but I've never fallen asleep.
I'm just like the puppet master. I'm creating conflict in your in your group. You're a former comedian, former stand-up comedian. You got out.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
escaped. Yeah.
They tried to pull me back. No, they didn't. Once you leave, you wish, you know. You're like, I wish people would be like, come back and do a gig. Yeah. It doesn't happen.
People really miss the Everly.
It's like a hydra. You cut off the head and 5,000 open micers take their place.
And somehow they all look identical
to
you as
well. They all say the exact same. I'm fat. My dick is small.
My dick's tiny.
And if my dick's normal size, it can't get hard.
So my dick's tiny. Anyone else? How many of y'all got a tiny dick?
You'd be amazed.
You'd be amazed. I don't think I would.
Don't you? A comedy audience.
Yeah.
Tiny, 50 people.
Tiny dick.
How many do you reckon have tiny dicks?
Where are you performing that 50 people are showing up?
It's a mythical show. I'm a good chat in Queensland. You have to leave Sydney.
There we go. Good chat in Queensland. Yeah, that's a good one. I performed to 8 people last night. They were lovely people. They were a good audience. There was 8.
I love it. I mean, I'm the king of performing the 4 people.
That was one of my first gigs when I moved to Sydney. It was Everly.
To
2 people. to friend of the pod, Jake from the Soccer Chat.
Oh, was he there?
That was like before he joined the soccer
group. Oh, that is awesome. There are so many Everlys where it's...
Yeah.
Sometimes you feel bad and sometimes you don't, where it's just like there are 4 people in. If you get the right comics, you're just like, have fun. It's going to be awesome. And sometimes you're like, oh man, I know you wanted to try new material, but like... You're not going to be able to.
That was a lesson I learned. Like I said, one of the first gigs ever in Sydney. Yeah, I think there were 2 people, maybe 3, or whatever. But like you and Ben doing great up top, just like being pals. Being pals with the audience, being pals with each other. And then I go up and it's like, it's fine. And then I remember you said to me, I was like, we were watching you. Like, oh yeah, Ryan's going to be fine. And then he started doing material.
I think sometimes I
was trying to get some work done.
You stand in the doorway with Ben and you're just like, you could see sometimes people standing like bolt upright being like, he's doing material. He needs to slouch those shoulders and ask someone what they do for a living. But me and Ben have thoroughly covered that for 35 minutes.
Yeah, we put them at ease by asking what their job is.
That's my and Ben's legendary crowd work. We ask someone their name and then their job.
And if they're in a relationship.
Yeah. And then we forget about it and ask them the same question again the next week. I think like twice people were like, you know, you talked to me last week and we're like, yeah,
and
tell
you
us
quit,
again.
You quit this profession, did you?
Yeah.
But yeah, you've come on specifically. You asked me to come on to this episode because today
we're begged. I begged.
Yeah, you begged me to be on. I definitely wasn't the other way around. Hey, I know you have a family and a job and
yeah,
a bunch
but someone
of important
tells me,
going.
All right, we're about to talk about post-hardcore. I'm like, all right, Amy, set aside 2 days. I'm disappearing. I'm in a fugue state.
Hey,
I wake up in a convenience store, yeah. Nude, being like, you know, Full Collapse is a seminal post-hardcore record, right? People are like, get out.
Can you leave?
Yeah.
They don't even call the cops. They feel too bad for you.
No. Yeah, they just give me a quarter and put me on my way.
Give you a poncho.
Like. Yeah, cover up. Cover up. I wouldn't be needing this.
I don't know if I've run you by this, but this episode, everyone knows, we go year by year. I'm just using one record from each year to get up to the present day. We're up to the year 1998. So, of course, unavoidably, we're talking about Refused's third full-length record, The Shape of Punk to Come.
Hell, yes.
Just a little record, just a little under the radar.
Yeah.
No one really cared.
I didn't really
hear
much about this record after. It's kind of a cult thing.
Yeah, you probably don't know about it.
Yeah, you could say that we're kind of into obscure shit, you know.
But you love this record still.
I do love this record.
It's nearly 30 years old. It's
That's crazy.
26 years old.
Damn.
That's like when we were kids and your dad would talk about Zeppelin.
Yeah, it's funny because my dad is, I've thought about this with my own daughter because like my dad grew up in the 70s in England when like punk broke. So he would go to like Clash shows and be like, and go to like Sex Pistols shows and be like, yeah, we used to see like Sid Vicious like cut himself and like, you know, the Clash were like protest anthems and stuff about working class conditions in England. And then like, I'm like, you know, real punk is about like going to the mall. Like, it's not about social change.
Real punk like, is about making sure your nose piercing doesn't get infected.
Real punk is who's going to prom with me? That's what I want to know because I'm lonely. It's like that's the kind of, and then you know, especially when you listen to like Blink and Sum 41
that's
and stuff.
Amazing.
And
that's so good.
Then like you grow up a little, but like still like a lot of the records that are like considered classics of the genre of the age I listen to aren't so much about like affecting social change. Like,
I
think like Thursday can get like a little bit political, but like stuff like, you know, like
Thursday are interesting. I actually quite like what Thursday did on War All the Time because it's like, it is like, it's not a political record, but it's a reaction to a political situation, which I think is, it's an emotional reaction to real things that are going on in the world. I think that's important to have.
Yeah, it's so cool because it's like such a big record that does, like, it's tough to quantify in words. Like, it sounds like it is, like, the sound of it sounds like it's a big political record, but the lyrics are so intensely personal and, like, not about really anything
like that.
It's great. But, I mean,
Thursday and Thrice are kind of, they kind of both do that quite well where it's like, here are the facts about what's going on. But rather than putting like a intellectual value judgment on that, I'm just going to tell you how I feel about it. And it's like really...
Yeah, I think, you're right. Thrice do that really well. Yeah. So like, one day I will tell my daughter when she's listening to whatever's new, you know, like Crunkcore's come back, let's say.
Crunkcore's coming back. It is coming back.
And she's like, I'm really into this. Crab-core. And I was like, we need to, It's like, put down Attack Attack 2. We need to listen to real music. Have you heard of Forever the Sickest Kids?
Have you heard of Chiodos?
Let's have just stop.
Have you heard of a little band called, a classic band called Dance Gavin Dance?
I think that's a thing with hardcore and punk.
Yeah.
I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong, but like, it seems like there's so much more gatekeeping over genre and what is and what is not than any genre of music. Like, you don't hear people like being like, oh, this guy rapped this bar.
Yeah.
So that technically doesn't make it rap. It makes it, you know,
sure,
fuck off or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Whereas
100%.
This, like, especially with hardcore, like, people clash with the ideas. They're like, hey, it's not about fighting. And they're like, all right, cool, we're straight edge hardcore. And then people are like, well, what if I want a beer? And they're like, well, fuck off. And then like, all right, we'll make drunk hardcore. And
drunk
then they're
hardcore.
Like, and they're like, all right, well, what if we want to get a little arty with it? And they'll be like, well, that has to be post hardcore.
Yeah, sure.
And even
me,
like sometimes I'm like, ah, fuck it. Like I whatever's good is good. But then you find yourself like gatekeeping as well. Like when people are like, man, you listen to Thursday and you're like, oh yeah, hell yeah. And they're like, I love emo, man. Escape the Fate. And you're like, oh, you fucking, they stink, brother.
There's gotta be, there does have to be like a line in the sand somewhere. But I know, like, the thing about hip hop's really interesting because rather than being like, oh, well, that's not that, that's this. It's more like, there's an element of that, but it's more like, it's almost like more nerdy because it's like a positive version of that.
Yeah.
Almost like, but and then you have the personal beefs. Like my favorite personal beef in hip hop is like Eminem versus Cage. I don't know if you know.
Yeah,
Cage,
yeah, I've heard.
But like, Cage was like, Eminem blew up, but he's just like ripping off my style sort of thing. And I'm like, Cage, you're a mentally ill, literally a mental patient. Like you need to sit down.
I think like, especially with the 2000s wave of like emo and hardcore, there's like a pretty fine distinction that I would cut where there's like good music.
Mm-hmm.
And then haircut music.
Haircut music,
which
is
like all about like the swooped haircut and hair slip. And like usually vilely misogynistic.
Yeah,
and, like,
yeah, truly.
Because there's some good stuff. Like Glassjaw are great, but they have like some pretty probo lyrics.
Yeah, that's Glassjaw are interesting because I feel like, I guess he's a big hip hop guy as well.
Yeah.
And you could say hip hop's very misogynistic, but the art... Like the art of it still stands for itself. Like, if it's about expressing a moment in time or expressing a singular emotion, I would maybe not excuse the person, but excuse the song.
Yeah.
I'd excuse the song for its misogyny. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
But then I think there are like bands that like traffic in that. Like, I think anything 100%. With like fucking Ronnie Radke.
Even
in
Dashboard
it
Confessional to an extent, man.
Oh,
like,
but I do love me some Dashboard.
Yeah, it's nothing. I'm not saying like you shouldn't, but like you can look at Converge, Jane Doe.
Yeah,
there's
sure.
a revisionist history on Jane Doe calling it like a
Dashboard's
bit
an interesting one because like that kind of like plays into like what in 2004 was kind of like a celebrated type of dude,
the
Seth Cohen archetype,
totally.
Like a guy who wears a like a nice
he's sensitive
a nice sweatshirt with a collared shirt over it, likes indie music, likes funny quirky romantic comedies, sad guy. Ignored by girls in high school, now treats women like shit, but adorably. And the people are like, oh my God, he should go on the cover of Team B. And now, like in 2024, that's kind of a like, oh, there's a very manipulative angle about all of this and a very kind of like, well, you ignored me in high school, so now I have free range to fuck whoever I want, treat whoever I want like shit.
Yeah.
I feel like a lot of guys from my class, me included, have fallen into like that trap of being like, I'm Seth Cohen. It's
I never watched Seth Cohen, but like the fucking Dashboard. It's almost like if you can take a step back, it's like, oh, I got cheated on once.
Mm.
But yes, now I get to let out my misogyny.
Yes.
Because it's that Louis C.K. joke. It's like, what about 9/11? You know what I mean? You know, you got hurt once and now you get to act like an asshole to everyone.
Yeah,
It's the same as like guys who are driving, they're just waiting to be cut off by someone of Asian descent. Because they're like, see?
Yeah,
like one guy.
That's a great comparison. But I think the point being like with Dashboard, like that's seen a reevaluation, whereas like at the time it would have been like, cute, romantic, and now a little bit like, ooh, he's a bit cut. But then like there's bands who are like, I hope you choke on my cock and like shit. And you're like, okay, well these guys are like, this is outright like villainy in a time when, you know.
At least the misogyny of hip hop is like it's almost presented differently where it's like, hey, this is the contract you're signing straight up.
Yeah.
Like this is who I am. It's like, again, it's that Patrice O'Neal thing. It's like, you went shark fishing and you caught a shark.
Yeah, sure.
That sort of thing. Like,
I also think like hip hop, I mean, I want to, because I'm, you know, not too knowledgeable, but like a lot of it
but
is like
misogyny in music.
Yeah,
in general,
and it's like one-upmanship and seeing like what you can do. I think it's like harsher when a fucking haircut cunt like screams at you over like chugga chugga guitars.
True.
They want you to die. You're just like, oh man, that guy's just like battle rapping. This guy hates women.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely know what you mean. Yeah, totally. That's interesting. Like a lot of the bands we brought up were, I reckon you could trace a direct line from this album to them.
Absolutely.
You can trace a direct line from Refused, Shape Punk to Come to obviously to Thursday, but then to those more like, I guess we call like the haircut bands as well. Yeah.
People who took the wrong lesson from.
Yeah. And that's a lot of the writing about it. I found is kind of about that. It's like they took the wrong lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Shape of Punk to Come wasn't quite what we thought it was going to be, but it was still a direct result of this.
But did
record.
You see Jeff Rickley's side project band United Nations have a song about this album.
Yeah, which
kind of like criticizes it a little bit.
Yeah, I think the criticisms I saw from him were more about not necessarily directly about the album, but like the fallout of the album.
Yeah, and
like
what happened next, the
acolytes of the album, I guess, more so. So let's get in. Like, actually, because like we both grew up with this album. I'll tell you my introduction to it. I heard Summer Holiday versus Punk Routine on a Punkorama compilation.
Oh, I love that shit.
One of those Epitaph compilations.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction to them, probably in 98.
Oh, wow.
When the album came out.
Right on there.
Yeah.
Pretty hip.
and then I think like, you know, because like Late Night Rage, they'd have the guest programs. You would always see New Noise.
Yeah.
And I don't. Well, because I was like 13, 14 at the time, I guess I didn't really make the connection. I think I knew they were the same band. Like I knew the band name, but I didn't make this connection that it was like from this album that had just come out or anything. I just thought it was like, oh, we love this song.
Yeah.
I didn't really go further into it.
Yeah. It's a 13-year-old like casual fan brand.
Totally. Get, I just like music
obsessed
videos.
With shit.
Yeah.
I think 13 is like where the glass breaks, and that's when like, you find stuff, and when you love it, you become fucking like obsessed with it. And and then like people at school like stop fucking talking about it. And then you meet other dorks.
Yeah,
and that's who you hang out.
Yeah,
with.
Totally. Yeah. So how did you come across it?
Much longer way around. So I would in 98, I would not have been living in Australia. I would have been in the Netherlands, but I would have been like in a pop punk and stuff. So
but
I
would have been closer to them geographically.
Yeah, much
speaking.
Closer. But like, it's funny because you don't think about stuff you don't hear about. Because I know like a lot of people like around my age were really into grunge and stuff.
Because
I was like seven when grunge really broke. But like,
we're about the same age. Yeah. I think I would have been 8 or 9.
But completely fucking missed me. Like, I know Smells Like Teen Spirit and stuff, but I don't think I got into a single one of those.
Yeah, trying to get into Nirvana was like almost the same for me as like trying to get into fucking the Beatles.
Yeah.
Like, even though they're fucking years and years apart, but like I just missed it. Like, I was just a little bit too young.
So I think like Green Day, Offspring.
Green Day, Offspring, yeah.
And then Blink were like, that's when you're like 8, and because like when I was 8, I was buying like all kinds of music. Like I had Backstreet's Bag.
I had Aqua.
I had the single of Barbie Girl, Aqua, and Dr. Jones, I believe.
Yeah.
All Saints, Spice Girls.
I loved All Saints, man.
They were great. They were, because like that shit, because I lived in
Holland. All Saints were better than Spice Girls. Can we just say that?
Musically, I think so. Yeah. And there's a movie they're all in where they all do nude scenes, which was like huge at the time. It's like, I don't know how much of this shit reaches over here, because like in the Netherlands, like a lot of the pop culture, especially when you go to a British school, comes directly from England. So All Saints versus Spice Girls.
It's a 30-minute flight. Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
Fucking Oasis versus Blur. Huge. Yeah, cool. Like that is like, in my year, you would like pick a side. Like,
yeah.
You'd be
I chose Blur.
I would have chosen Blur at the time. But now I think I'm like, probably like if you're having a beer, you're going to listen to Oasis.
You want some Oasis? Yeah. Oasis is better songwriters.
Yeah.
Blur are just more experimental.
Yeah. They're more pretentious, artsy lads.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think Blink, Offspring, and Green Day, probably Green Day and Offspring first, were the first time I was like, oh, they make music for me.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where,
but that's the same thing with Offspring, like comes back to the misogyny, like Self-Esteem, fucking amazing song, but it is like this self-pitying incel anthem. Like
one of the first songs I learned by the Offspring to play on guitar was She's Got Issues.
And then
like running the tab on that and then looking at the lyrics. Looking at the lyrics now, you're like, fuck, this song, like, they hate this woman.
this poor lady.
Yeah. Whereas, so, like, and then I think Offspring fell off a little for me, but, like, Green Day and Blink, I was like, oh, I'm into this.
Yeah,
I got to find more shit like this. Coincidentally, Tony Hawk comes out around the same time.
That's huge.
So you get introduced to, like, Lagwagon.
Do you remember X Games and stuff as well, the X Games soundtrack?
Yeah.
That was big for me as well. So I was like, Punkorama, Tony Hawk. Tony Hawk got me into Goldfinger,
yes.
Which then got me into veganism. Like, it's just like all these Yeah, yeah. All
so
these
Tony Hawk
would have
got me into Lagwagon and Millencolin, which leads you to Fat Records, which leads you to Fat Music for Fat People.
Which leads you to Epitaph.
Yeah, which, and again, leads you to bands like the Ataris and stuff, who kind of like, when you're 14 or 15, really hit, because that's like pre-emo, but super emo, like Girls Don't Like Me, fast fucking guitars, palm mutes, we got this. And then like Blink and stuff go away for a bit, and then Green Day kind of do the American Idiot thing. But around this time, like emo fucking explodes in like year 11 for me, 2003.
Yeah.
And so I was pretty on board with bands like Taking Back Sunday straight away.
Yeah. Taking Back Sunday were an easy sell for
me. Yeah, they're a great like introduction to that music.
I think there's something about it because like they sounded like you think about what's the big single? It was Cut from the Team, Cube Without the E. Yeah. You think about that guitar intro with the like the sort of chorus reverb effect on it.
Oh man.
And it feels like oh yeah, my parents listened to The Cure. I remember this sound. So it was like something familiar from your childhood, but it was like cool. It was for me.
Yes.
There was something about that really hooked me in. I just remember that fucking guitar intro feeling like kind of 80s-ish and being like, oh, but it's not.
Yes. And I think like with that, even more than like Green Day and Blink, when I discovered like Taking Back Sunday and then found like Jimmy World and stuff, you're like, okay, there's a whole scene for me. And then when you get obsessed. And I don't know if you remember this or even know it. I think I've mentioned it on one podcast before, but there was a game on the web browser, Flash game.
Emo game?
Yeah, emo game.
I love emo game.
So emo game.
And that got me into Hot Water Music and fucking Cursive.
Yes. So emo game comes out and then emo game 2. So it's like, and you get the whole roster of fights. A game that has now vanished from the internet because it's like vilely, like, edgy humor. Like, I think like the second one has the cast of Friends raping Ian MacKay to death and cutting off his head, and it comes out of Phoebe's vagina. Like that's like the humor you're dealing with.
And then what are the chances you and I both really get into Cumtown in our 20s?
Goddamn,
like, so it's inevitable.
It's an argument for predestination, really. But so like that game comes out and then you're like, okay, there's a roster of 20 characters. I've never heard of a band called Dashboard. I've never heard of a band called Juliana Theory. I'm going to download all of one song from each of these and make a CD. Had that CD. Emo started breaking in my school. I was handing that copy of that CD around like candy.
Oh, man,
people
were the coolest of the uncool
People were like, we want to, like, we've just heard Taking Back Sunday. What else you got? And I was like, all right, here's a sampler for you.
That's interesting. I don't think I like cut it, copy and pasted that quote, but like a guy wrote a book about this time in like counterculture and punk music. And he said like, that idea of MTV plus file sharing, plus, music piracy, burning CDs, blah, blah, blah. That was a huge part of how this proliferated.
Yeah. Without file sharing, I'd have a record.
Oh, as suburban kids from Australia, what are the chances? Yeah. Like, it's not going to happen.
We were lucky. We had a record store that the punk emo wave broke, they imported a lot of CDs, but it's like, you know, they're $20 each. And fucking working at Big W, you can't afford. I got heavily into buying CDs in like 2006 when I was at uni and making a bit more money.
Yeah.
But yes, this is all a long way of saying I got into these guys. And then like you find your Jimmy Worlds and then like you find your stuff like Death Cab for Cutie and Bright Eyes, the little softer stuff. So you're like, I've got a deeper side too. I like slow shit.
I like poetry.
Yeah. It's like, that's the dumb brain of just being like, hey, I like all this stuff, but also like there's slow shit for girls.
So you were just like in this culture, you like, this is how it happened. Then you found Refused through
Refused a couple of days, because even like a couple of years later, because at the time, like when that stuff broke, like I didn't like Thursday was as hard as I was go with like screamy shit. Like I at the time I didn't really love bands.
That
like,
was 2003, 2004 war all the time.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. So I didn't at the time like love bands like Alexis on Fire and like the really shouty bands. I do now. So, like, it took me a few years, and then, like, eventually, like, you know, once you get obsessed with something, and you also kind of push back against that scene, because the more it broke, the more like annoying people uh-huh. came, and the worse a band. So like,
and then you get the Escape the Fates.
You get your Escape the Fates and like Falling in Reverse and stuff like that. Yeah. And then so a few years later, I think I'm going back, like, trying to trace the roots of stuff. That's when you like become aware of like your American footballs and your cap and jazz.
That's a big
And so that's when I found Refuse, which would have probably been my early 20s.
I love the origin story. I love it.
Yeah, was that way too? Are we going to go for like 4 hours?
Yeah, well, let's go for 4 hours. Let's do it now. No. That, like I relate to that. I'm glad you're here to tell that because that's almost exactly the same as me. I think the main difference was then I started playing in bands.
Yeah.
So I had a million sort of Jamies telling me what bands to listen to. Like you were at school doing that for other people, but like, after high school and everything, I had people in bands who were like, no, that's fake shit. You got to listen to this.
Yeah.
Which is great. Like the gatekeeping can be good because then you just find more and more.
Would have had absolutepunk.net. Like that would have been. Yeah. Because like even my friends, like out of like a group of like 10 like high school friends, like one of them would like the music I did. But then when you're like, hey, you want to talk about like the album track on Foot? And they're like, what? I've listened to fucking Understanding in a Car.
That's the only
and
song.
And so like you get mad at your friends for like being like, why aren't you as nerdy about this as me?
I think I heard Cross Out. Sorry, we got to get to this record. But I think I heard Cross Out the Eyes before I heard Understanding in a Car Crash. And I was like, oh, Thursday are scary.
Yeah.
Like, Paris Thursday are scary.
Paris in Flames was the first one I heard. That was on the CD I handed out to people.
Yeah. But yeah, we are coming back to Refuse, which is where all of this is like our generation, I think. It all like exploded from this record. I would argue.
You can definitely trace the roots to a lot of seminal mid-2000s records directly to this.
So this is like, it's equally derided and lauded, I think, this record.
Yeah.
I think pretty much equally, because like a lot of people who are like in the scene properly would be like, oh, it's more style than substance. It's like, you know, they suddenly changed what they were, because they were this vegan straight edge band from Sweden.
Yeah.
They're a Swedish band. They released released an album called Songs to Fan the Flames of Discontent. Very, very different vegan straight edge to what you had in America, because like you had Earth Crisis, who were pretty they weren't apolitical, but like Refuse are outwardly leftist.
Yes, I band, think that's
whereas
pretty
Earth
obvious.
Crisis are pretty militant. Like they're still radical, but like they do have these fascist undertones.
Yeah,
whereas like Refuse are like anarchy, even when they were vegan straight edge, they were like.
Yeah, that's probably like more a European American thing.
That's exactly what
Europeans
I read.
Just being like, yeah, cool, man, and Americans being like, we have to fucking militarize.
Yeah,
this. Maybe we'll kill someone.
So they toured. They toured with Snapcase. The last episode I did with Jackson Stewart, we covered a Snapcase record.
Yeah,
they toured Songs to Fan the Flames with Snapcase. My friend who grew up in Long Island saw them on that tour. It was like. Coalition. It was it was almost like a VFW hall, but it was like the Coalition for People with AIDS.
Yeah,
like that's the venue they played.
Yeah, right. That's cool. I wish, like, I don't know. It's like, because I wasn't in the Australian music scene at all. Yeah. I wish like I had been to like stuff like that, like VFW shows.
Yeah, and, like, shit like that's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
So he was saying like my friend Brendan Casey. This is from him. He was like, they're legit dudes. They are a legit hardcore band. They are from the scene, but. Like to see them, to hang out with them at this show with a bunch of other hardcore bands, and just see them wearing like oversized hoodies, beanies, like cargo shorts, all that stuff, and then like a few months later, see them in the button downs and the sweaters on MTV. He was like, it did call into question what was going on. And I think that's where like the style over substance accusations sort of came from.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of interesting. But I think, like, you know, when they're like, all right, well, we want to kind of make a different record, defining record. Yeah. Some people do get hung up on aesthetics. And, like, sometimes I think that can be to your detriment or benefit and stuff. Like, how many fucking bands are there in 2010 that are like, we got to wear suits on stage because the Hives and Franz Ferdinand
do shit like that.
I can see how people would be like, well, now you're wearing clothes, it's fucking a bit goofy.
Yeah.
But like also like sometimes being like, well, if we're doing this, we're not gonna fucking
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I like Slipknot.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean,
so not wear costumes.
Well, what did you ever think about what you'd wear when you like?
Absolutely. Every fucking show. Yeah. Absolutely. Yes. You need to wear, like, making a decision to be like, oh, I'm going to wear this band's t-shirt because that'll make me look cooler. To
yeah,
the people
right.
My like, absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
I think if I was up there, there would be like a consideration of like, all right, how tight are the pants going to be?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
What?
Yeah.
Who am I repping?
Yeah,
like, what
yeah,
boys
totally.
Am I repping? What yeah. label am I repping?
It's weird. I think there were two waves of like backlash on this record because like the first one was like, oh, you're not a real, this isn't real hardcore anymore. Like you guys used to be real hardcore. And then later on, like kind of more in retrospect, because it had all the jazz influences and the techno influences throughout, people like, well, it's not real jazz and it's not real techno. Like,
yeah.
like I think those references, and I kind of do get that because I think like they were obviously trying to do something new, but I don't know if they had a really deep grasp of jazz and the jazz and techno they were trying to incorporate.
Sure.
I don't know, but I'm like, I think that is almost like it's a bit of a galaxy brain take. I understand.
Yes.
But like, yeah.
But I mean, when you talk about like the backlash and the second backlash, that's got to come mostly from people like pretty in that scene, right? Because I think if you went to like your Pitchfork or your Rolling Stone, they're both pretty.
Pitchfork gave it 9.4, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think if you go to like most mainstream publications, they would say it's like an album that is seminal and holds up, right?
I think like that's the thing. I almost feel like talking about it now, whether or not you like it or whether or not you think it's authentic is almost beside the point because it is, like I said, 26 years old now and just literally one of the most, like maybe the most influential punk records since it came out.
I think it certainly doesn't hurt that they completely blew like themselves up after this.
Yeah,
that,
yeah,
like,
that story's crazy.
That
yeah.
contributes to the myth.
Yeah.
Like you make what a lot of people consider like the benchmark, the tentpole,
yeah.
the perfect album, and then you fucking
yeah.
go away.
But no one thought it was like the benchmark until 5 years
yeah.
later. So 98, they put it out, they tour the States, they're playing half empty venues. No one gives a fucking shit about Refuse.
Yeah.
Because they're just some random band from Sweden who toured as a support in the States
yep.
once. And then, yeah, like they just like implode on themselves. And then, yeah, 5 years later, that is the myth. It's like, oh, they wrote this amazing album. They just couldn't handle it. And they just fucking...
Yeah.
Bleh,
and then
like,
they're
yeah,
gone.
They
like how many of those, like, I guess like...
And
first...
they have this artifact, the New Noise music video as well. Like
yeah.
to add on to that.
And like, yeah. they got the crazy stuff. Like the liner notes from the original record are like fucking wild. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I've heard
they're really over
like,
the top. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And like the documentary about them that like came out when they reissued is kind of like a bit like they're just kind of like vague and
very
stuff.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
pretentious and artsy. So I wonder like if this had done mediocre and they'd been touring and then 2 years later, like, all right, album cycle's
oh,
over.
Yeah,
we got to
yeah,
make
yeah.
another one. How do we
album
top
four.
Shape from punk to come? You find like often with those things that people are like, okay, we made the fucking crazy art rock record. Now we do what we call a back to basics record.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you
yeah.
always, especially with like emo bands, you always hear, I think every Taking Back Sunday album cycle until very recently, they were like, this has the heaviest song we've ever written. And like, it took them like 12 years just to be like, no, dude, this is just a fucking sick selection of songs.
Yeah, 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 totally. Yeah.
And like, people do that. And then when they release something that doesn't hit, they're like, I mean, like Newfound Glory did it with like Coming Home. They made like, they strayed from like pure pop punk into slower stuff. And the next one, they're like, it's return to form records. So
yeah,
like,
sure.
they probably would have been like, all right, college shirts off. Slap
mosh,
a hoodie on.
Parts.
We're fucking going crazy. It's
yeah.
We'll call it vegan fucking fascist party, and we'll go nuts. Like, I think the fact that they went away for so long
yeah.
has like because like the two albums they released after this, they're fine.
Yeah, I haven't listened to them. Freedom and War Music.
Yeah, they're so, okay.
Well, Freedom was 2012. Was that right?
I think a little later because like I saw them in 2015.
I think War Music was 2018
been,
though.
Yeah. 2018 or 2019, maybe.
Yeah, something like that. It was pre-COVID.
And, like,
yeah.
they're fine. Like,
yeah.
they're good post-hardcore records,
yeah,
but
yeah.
you wouldn't listen to them and be like, oh, fuck.
It's changing
the face
of music.
They're redefining the genre again.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not sure how much more you can redefine the genre.
Yeah.
You do it once, like...
Yeah. It's interesting to think about it now, like in the context of all these other records that we've talked about, because it was in the middle of like the nu metal boom as well.
Yes.
But nu metal is also a direct result of like hardcore, post-hardcore bands.
Speaking of,
it's Helmet. It's Helmet, then you get Deftones.
Have like, you seen that Crazy Town have covered New Noise live?
Yeah, yeah, a bunch of times. Yeah. Like the guy from Linkin Park is like, there wouldn't be a Linkin Park without Refuse. Yeah, so it's like these bands that are categorically not punk bands.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the influence is huge. And yeah, so I do wonder about like what would happen if they just kept
going,
making albums. But, you know, I don't know.
I'll give some like context for people who may not have heard it. If you haven't heard it, go listen to it. I feel like we're going into this with like the assumption that everybody knows what we're talking about already.
Yeah, I suppose.
Like, I don't want to be assuming that.
Do you think it's the biggest album you've done so far in terms of like its reach?
Yeah, maybe. I'm trying to think. God, I can't. Probably, like, at least retroactively, it's the most mainstream. Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, okay.
Because, like, there were a lot of bands that it's weird. I think it is. Because, like, we had Biohazard, and they're, like, a huge festival act.
But yeah, because there would be, like, bands that are,
no
like,
one knows who Biohazard
huge in hardcore.
Yeah.
Like, maybe bigger in hardcore than Refused are in hardcore, but Refused bigger overall.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Refused are on MTV.
Like, I think every like, a lot of people, even people who hate post-hardcore music, if you hear people be like, it's the bear!
It's the bear! It's from the bear!
It's the bear show!
The bear show. I guess, like, okay, yeah, I'll this is like a nice little like summation of the record, I reckon. This is just from the Pitchfork review. Mm-hmm. Throughout the record, the band found some platonic ideal of tension and release, mutating constantly and pulling in all sorts of vaguely silly genre leap ideas like chintzy techno beats, jazz breaks, without altering the fundamental heaviness that they were so great at.
I think that's 100% true. And I also like to circle back to what we were just talking about. If they had released an album after this, 2 years later, let's say, and they're not going to call it something as stupid as The Shape of Punk Continued or whatever.
Yeah.
But like they do that, you put in like that bass, like boom, 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 boom.
Oh,
boom.
Yeah.
People will review it and be like, well, they're just doing what
they're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
Again.
They're ripping off themselves.
Yeah.
And so, like, because this is so unique at the time, and like what I think is so great about a lot of the songs is like they change structure constantly.
Yeah. That's the thing. For something that's so mainstream and like all the criticisms against it being kind of like too accessible or too sort of like MTV generation. I'm like, none of these songs, I mean, it's not that they don't have a chorus, but they don't follow verse, chorus, verse, bridge. Like, they don't follow a structure.
I also don't think, like, in terms of like mainstream, but like, I don't think if I went to a friend who loved indie rock and was like, listen to this, I think he'd be like, it's still a bunch of dudes shouting.
Yeah. I can't understand what he's saying, sort of thing. I think the main criticism that comes at Dennis Lixon, who's the singer, is that he's ripping off Nation of Ulysses. And I think maybe that came more to the forefront when he did International Noise Conspiracy.
Yeah.
Because everyone says International Noise Conspiracy is a direct ripoff of The Makeup, which is the Nation of Ulysses guy's next band, basically.
Okay.
But I think like I don't think they tried to hide it. I think they were pretty conscious of the fact that we love Nation of Ulysses. We're going to try and do our Nation of Ulysses record.
I don't think there's anything wrong.
I don't think they were trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes with that.
Is there anything wrong with also like wearing your influences on your sleeve? Like, just
well, people were saying that they didn't. People were saying that they were trying to like sell back Nation of Ulysses to people who may not have known them. But so I'm like, I think they just assumed that everyone would know what they were doing.
So you mean just like ripping off a style and being like, this is ours?
Yeah, I think that's the criticism leveled against them. I don't agree with that. Okay. I think they were pretty conscious of what they were doing. They were like, everybody know. Like, I think from their point of view, this is pure conjecture.
Yeah.
They would be like, you're getting work messages.
Yeah, it's not important.
It's not important. I love it. I love that you're on the clock right now. It's like, nah, I've got to go talk about Refused.
It's important.
Sorry, I totally lost my train. I just don't think there was any like intentional
ripoff.
There was it was like an intentional influence. I don't think they were trying to go under the radar with it. Or anything. They're like,
sure,
we love this band. And yeah, it's going to be obvious that we love this band. From the artwork to the liner notes to the way we dress, everyone's going to know that this is an homage to Nation of Ulysses.
Yeah, maybe.
Which were like 10 years before this record came out as well. So I'm like, it's a pretty legitimate influence as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I guess maybe that's the problem. Unless you're in every interview being like, we love Nation of Ulysses.
Yeah.
Like for like a fully fucking hardcore kid to be like, well, they haven't mentioned it this one time.
Yeah.
Like,
but it's weird because like the band I was in a band called Marathon, and it was like a direct, I just loved Converge so much. Yep. I fucking love Converge. I want to do a band that sounded like Converge.
Yep.
And I just assumed that everyone would understand that. But then like every now and then people would be like, oh, you're just ripping off Converge. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that's a fucking point, dude.
I wasn't trying to hide anything. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I just really like this type of music.
Shirt,
yeah, exactly. So we covered the song Eagles Become Vultures. I don't know if you know that song. We covered that at a show, and someone came up to us and like, oh man, you can't do that. Like, if you sound that close to Converge, you can't then cover a Converge.
That's
like,
wild.
What are you talking about?
That's like the craziest. It's like, all right, well, why are you gatekeeping? It's like, so what do you want me to cover? Fucking like Hall & Oates? Like...
We did cover No Spiritual Surrender by Inside Out a couple of times. That was really fun.
Yeah, stuff like that's awesome. Yeah. That I think there are bands in like that genre, and I can't, the name of who it is doesn't like it escapes me now, but like there are people who are like, well, we're making pop punk music, and people are like, this is pop punk, and like, no, it's not.
Yeah, it's, I love that. It's not a pop enough.
It's like, I mean, the whole like emo becoming a dirty word. Like, there are a lot of people who push back against that, and were like, actually, it's kind of like technical punk shouting, but emotional.
Yeah.
People are like, we could call that emo for short. And they're like, no. Yeah.
That's I love that. I talked about it with Alex, your esteemed co-host, about Rites of Spring. And yeah, Guy Picciotto being like, all hardcore's emotional, all punk is emotional.
Yeah.
Like, what are you talking about? Like,
exactly.
I'm trying to get some structure here. There's just so much on the internet about this record.
Oh,
I just
totally.
Like have all these kind of points to cover, and they're not really in any order. Oh, I like this. I actually do like this. This is from a Vice article written by a guy named David Anthony. Not Dave Anthony.
No.
From The Dollop.
Oh, that would
David
be,
Anthony.
That would be so cool, though.
If Dave Anthony was into reviews.
Yeah, because then you could just get him on for the next
1998!
One. 1998! Like, come on. We're going to do Freedom together.
Yeah, yeah. I like this. Refused, and this is kind of in the context of the backlash and the criticism and stuff like that. Refused knew the shape of punk to come, knew if... this album did what they wanted it to, they'd forever be criticized, and they embraced that reality without a second thought. It was all part of the plan. For anyone to refused first had to sacrifice themselves. So I feel like they knew there was going to be blowback. Again, this is all like a retroactive kind of thing.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know they were going to break up.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah, so like how much of it in the grand plan is to be like, but by the end of it, we're also going to fucking hate each other.
Yeah.
And not want to do this.
But I mean, everyone talks about the title, and it's a reference to Ornette Coleman's Shape of Jazz to Come. But like to call your record Shape of Punk to Come is a big...
Yeah.
It's a real big dick move.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It fucking rules.
Yeah, it does rule. I agree, it rules. Yeah.
I think, but then again, like refuse... get away with it. I think if you, so many bands, if they were just like, if they called an album like this is hardcore, you'd have to be like, well, you gotta fucking back it up, like at least like,
yeah, that's what I mean, like whether you love it or hate it, like it really seems beside the point, because like they did so much on this record. It's not just like the differing, like, oh, jazz and techno, blah blah blah, like, you can criticize that, whatever, but like start to finish, this album, like I've never, I came into this hearing singles. I came into this hearing Summer Holiday versus Punk Routine and New Noise completely separately. When I got the album, I don't think of it as... It's one thing.
It's cohesive.
It is one thing. It's not like the album with New Noise on it. It's like, no, it's The Shape of Punk to Come.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's like the vision behind it. Again, love it or hate it, doesn't matter. But like as a cohesive piece of art, I don't... like.
Yeah. And I mean, like, how much are they like being like, well, every album's now going to take this and be exactly like what we want. That would not be interesting either.
Exactly.
Like, I think it's kind of cool to like, they whack their dicks on the table, be like, here's the blueprint. Yeah. We fucking did it.
I think they did. I think they did kind of like fuck themselves because like, I think the part of the reason they would have broken up is because of the pressure they put on themselves.
Yeah, with this record.
Absolutely.
So,
even though they didn't know that that was coming.
Do you know how harmonious the making of it was? Like, were they not getting along during it, or did it all fall apart after?
I can't see much about that. I reckon there's some implications that it was tense.
Because I wonder how psyched they were on it, you know?
Yeah.
Because to name it such, like, an album that has such intent,
yeah,
and to put as much, like, funny, silly little influences and yeah, be like, all right, well, here we're going to go a little jazz. Here we've incorporated some techno. Here we've done like a spoken word thing. I wonder how much of them are like, damn,
I'm going to read Allen Ginsberg's How.
Like, I wonder how much of them are like, well, we are making our fucking like statement album here.
Yeah.
Versus just like, oh, we're just making the next Refuse record.
Yeah, it's got a big vision behind
like
it.
It's a swing album.
It
like
is, yeah, big swing. Yeah, yeah. 100%.
Like, especially considering like what came before. Like,
totally.
Like, I mean, they've always been good.
Yeah.
I think I read an article about them where they were just like, the thing you forget, like, because everyone talks about like the little techno interludes and and the jazzy bass and stuff, but they do know how to write a fucking song. Like, there is pop songcraft.
Dude, Refused to Fucking Dead is still like, as much as like, I can have a critical eye when I look at this record. When Refuse to Fucking Dead with that guitar, the chunky guitar riff comes in, I'm just like, and the drums behind it, like those two songs actually, Protest Song 68 with the drums, the drum intro on Protest Song 68, straight into Refuse to Fucking Dead.
Yeah.
Those two songs, that's the high point of the record.
Even think about like New Noise as a like in terms of like pop songcraft, to keep that intro going for a minute before like it explodes. It's like, man, they know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing.
Like,
exactly.
This is like exquisitely technically crafted.
Yeah, totally.
And there are a lot of flourishes.
Yeah.
But like there is pop songwriting sensibility in there.
It's interesting what you're saying because it kind of like, it's almost like a paradox, like a contradiction in itself, because having an intro that goes for 1 minute, like in terms of building tension and like songwriting, like absolutely ideal. But in terms of like accessibility, for that to be the lead single and it's got 1 minute
with
like just repetition,
that's
a barrier to entry. That's like, that is like, oh, I'm bored. Like a lot of people would be like, when is it? Oh, okay, I'm done.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah. I've never... Because, like, I mean, you see how...
Because I think what you said is true, but then you also, like, look at it... Like, you look at the timestamps, you're like, a minute?
Sure.
Yeah.
But you see how that song is proliferated now, especially in its use in, like, television and movies.
It's crazy.
Where, like, that intro...
It's crazy.
That intro, they play the whole minute, usually. And then,
Friday Night Lights.
It usually blends down into the mix is when he starts screaming.
Like,
because the intro is such a, like...
So tense.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It's incredible. Yeah, you're right.
An incredible piece of songwriting and structure, I think.
I found this really funny review, like a hate piece, like a very, very buddy head style.
Punknews.org.
It's from a zine called Impose. And found some quotes. I think he makes some prescient points. Like, I think, but it is more funny than anything. There's no author because I think it's too, he didn't want to get hate. Or
whatever.
He or she.
Too salacious.
This is the single most overrated album to come out in the late 90s. You know what Shape of Punk to Come really is? It's a bad attempt at combining Born Against and Nation of Ulysses with a bunch of techno music thrown in. That, upon any listen today, seems incredibly dated. And it's perpetrated by a bunch of Swedes with government art grants and books on Situationist International.
Yeah, right. So that, like, even if you go all the way back to what I was talking about with Blur versus Oasis, there is, like, because anti-Blur people are anti, like, pretentious, well-educated, like, because Blur were almost always, like, the, we kind of went to, like, arty schools like, and our parents had a little class. Bit of money, whereas Oasis were like, we fucking play football in the streets.
Like,
so there is a little, like, you know, like, a little, like, anti, like, European, like, oh, look what they've got. They're into fucking books and shit, like.
And we covered that. And again, like, it's weird that he's like bringing up Born Against the Nation of Ulysses, because I'm like, Refuse to Fucking Dead, Born Against is fuck, like, it is clearly referencing these bands. It's not trying to, again, not trying to pull the wool over anyone's eyes.
I can see maybe like, I can see maybe like why you would call it overrated, just because so much praise
Yeah.
Was retroactively heaped on it. The idea that it is incredibly dated,
I listened to it this morning.
I listened to it last night. And it fits in perfectly with any post-hardcore release, all the way up till today.
Well, I want to talk about the production, but I want to get through just a couple more things before we talk about like Pelle Henriksen and Tonteknik Studios or whatever. But this guy, they go on, because some of this I'm not, I don't completely disagree with. Pretty much, we talked about this, about new Nation of Ulysses and stuff, because he's like, Refuse and Lixon's catalog is a bunch of crap we'd already heard before, but by people who did it better and with more integrity. I don't know, whatever, man. But what I like is what comes next. He says, at their best, Refused were simply a thinking person's rage against the machine. Which is very, like, that's like what we're talking about, like the revisionist history, retrospective 2020 type thing. A lot of that is positive, talking about its like legacy and like how influential it was. This is kind of the same thing, but being like, I mean, really, like, are they that different to the nu metal scene? Like if they were still going, like you said, if they released the next record, would they have ended up on the fucking Family Values tour?
Yeah.
Next to Limp Bizkit? Maybe.
It is possible.
Quite possibly.
Like, I mean, a band as good as Deftones gets lumped in with that shit all the time.
If you told me
like Refused and Deftones were touring together in 99-2000, I'd be like, oh, they could fit. Sense.
Well, Snapcase toured with Deftones.
Yeah.
So this is the problem with like kind of like moving away from your subculture, like a subculture like hardcore, is like you kind of do end up having to share the pool with like other artists who are maybe less tasteful than you.
Sure.
That's just the way it is. Like, you end up touring with Korn.
Yeah, right.
That's just
right,
it.
Right.
That's you just will... it. If you don't want to be, if you don't want to like hold,
be on a festival with Escape the Fate.
Yeah, yeah. If you leave the underground, you don't want to hold that scene close to your heart. Exactly. And like a lot of people, like, you want to make money. you know what I mean? Like, you got to live.
It's also, I think, more in punk and hardcore than anything, there's a lot of like criticism and hate for bands not acknowledging what came before, you know?
Yeah.
And like, that's always been around. Like,
but you can't. Like, it's not your responsibility.
Green Day were destroyed for making pop, like, for making a glossier sheen on punk songs. Like,
yeah.
And then Blink were destroyed for doing an even more sophomoric Green Day.
Yeah.
And then, like, a lot of emo bands destroyed because they don't sound like Sunny Day Real Estate and stuff like that. And Sunny Day Real Estate and all those bands have Refused Syndrome, where it's like they release one seminal album and then shot themselves in the foot and went away, and they influenced a ton of bands.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of, like, I don't know, like, well, they don't acknowledge their forefathers. And it's like, well, you can hear it in the music.
They do. Yeah. They literally do. Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. And also, like, this is so full of references. Like, it's literally sampling jazz bands. Like, the art itself is, like, a direct imitation of, I'm quoting here, 1977's Teenage Dance Session by the Rye Coalition. Ornette Coleman. Like, yeah, and then, like, the, what is it? There's a sample in there in one of the songs of, like, I think it's, I can't remember the artist, but the song's called Night in Tunisia.
Yeah,
like the jazz samples coming in. So like all the references are kind of there. And like, again, I was talking to my friend Brendan, and he was like, the references are correct. He's just not sure if they go, like, they all make sense. Like, they all like do fit in with like the concept of the album and stuff like that. But like how deep is their understanding of these references?
So
like beyond just using them for aesthetic purposes.
Yeah, so the
purposes.
Criticism is kind of like its surface level pretension.
Yeah, yeah, like, it's not actually real pretentiousness.
Well, just mentioning it doesn't mean you understand it. You
totally.
Like,
yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, Crazy Town covering them.
Yeah, Crazy Town covering them is great.
Oh, I like this quote. So I've got a quote from this is from a Vice a Stereogum article that was written by Patrick Lyons. He interviewed a bunch of different musicians just to get some views on it. I really like this. This is from the guitarist, the ex-guitarist of Poison the Well, who went on to do Sleigh Bells.
Yeah.
Derek Miller.
And did Poison the Well worked with the production team, yeah, didn't they?
Yeah, exactly. So in 2003, Poison the Well released one of my favorite albums ever called You Become You. You Come Before You. Fucking hell. The coffee's really hitting me. Yeah, like getting ahead of my
like
words.
Sounds like how you just shit your pants, yeah, buddy.
Wow. They went over to Sweden to record Pelle Henriksson at the Tonteknik Studios. And they who also worked with a Swedish band Cult of Luna, who, yep, are a post-metal band. All made famous by this record. All made famous by Shape of Punk to Come. It's like, these are the guys you go see if you want a really
which
good
is
sounding
like,
record.
In itself, like, huge in terms of like, if you're arguing that the record is not that influential, it's like, well, people are traveling to Sweden
to make sound,
to get the sound.
I think Cult of Luna still work with this guy. I think they're almost like partners. Yeah. Like, Cult of Luna still go to this record studio to get their atmospheric, yeah, sound. And Cult of Luna records sound fucking huge. Like,
yeah,
like they are. I probably, in terms of like post-metal or whatever, I probably enjoy Cult of Luna more than bands like Isis and stuff like that, just because the atmosphere is so palpable when you listen to it.
Yeah, and so that's also due to the production, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, so the legacy is not just in terms of the songs they wrote, but the production of the record. Like, it's just unavoidable. But Derek, it's so funny because he's like, talking about when it came out, he's like, I'm not wearing my glasses. I'm really struggling here. I had no idea what I was hearing and seeing. And I strongly disliked The Shape of Punk to Come when it came out.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, really interesting. They looked and sounded so radical. My 16-year-old ears and eyes couldn't make any sense of it.
Yeah. Being 16,
yeah,
completely makes sense now.
So he was 16 and he was in a, you know, about to start a, like, Poison the Well, those early records,
yeah,
are pretty horrific. Like, just mosh, melodic mosh metal. Like,
yeah,
weird.
Right.
Like, everyone loves that song, Nerdy. It's not good. It's
not
a good record.
I've heard it.
But then You Come Before You comes out and it's just like, for me, that's probably a game changer in my own,
yeah,
musical.
So they did their own
journey.
Refuse there.
A little bit, yeah, 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 yeah. And so that was, so he was 16 in 98 by the time they went in 2003, 2004.
So his early 20s.
Yeah, early 20s, yeah, yeah. So again, it's all retroactive, like, come,
yeah,
back to it. And then our spiritual king, Jeff Rickley. this is what I'm saying about the production as well. This kind of all relates to that. It made me want a good sounding record mostly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was one of the biggest changes. A lot of bands were experimental, like Ink and Dagger. But the Refused record sounded like $1 million and nobody in hardcore was doing that. Like, they weren't taking pride in the, I guess, the fidelity of their recorded product, because they were all live bands. Like,
yeah,
it was about playing live and getting the energy in the room. And then,
yeah,
all of a sudden it's like, well, what about a lasting artifact?
Yes. This is like...
Yeah.
Incredibly aided by the studio, this record.
Yeah,
which
totally,
is why,
yeah,
it lives so long.
Yeah, 100%.
Jeff's right. Get Jeff on the pod.
Jeff,
we,
yeah,
love,
yeah,
you.
And yeah, that's about it. I think that covers all my notes, like the context I wanted to give on it. But yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's it.
I mean, it's such a great record. I struggle sometimes, like, I love talking about music, but then sometimes, like, critically, I struggle to...
I've been struggling
talk about
a bit.
Like, songwriting and stuff, because all my response is so emotional, and then I'll rush to a point, and then circle back. Yeah, it's interesting. It really... my way of coming to it, because it really inspired a scene that I found first, and then you dig back.
Yeah,
and
totally.
So often, I think, when you dig back, you don't like the stuff as much. Like, I'll give you an example. I know how influential the Descendants were,
sure,
on someone like Blink-182. I don't really enjoy, like, I'd like the Descendants just fine,
yeah,
but I would never be like, I've got to chuck fucking Milo Goes to College on.
Yeah. I don't like Milo Goes. There's a couple of songs. I like Bikage.
Yeah. I mean, like, they're fun, but then, like, you see stuff and you're like, oh, well, like, I can see that they're influenced,
yeah,
but these bands have built and made a sound that I like, and especially with stuff like Blink,
yeah,
when you're 13. More accessible, talking about stuff I understand a bit more. So
getting dumped.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I think what this record did for me, like, again, sort of like, I heard those singles when it came out. I don't think I honestly, it's all a big sort of nebulous cloud for me that time in terms of music and stuff, because, yeah, like, we've already covered it, Tony Hawk, X Games, all those soundtracks. It was all soundtracks and bits and pieces.
Yeah.
But I think what this record did, it saved me from becoming a juggalo, essentially. Because, dude, no, I loved, like, I know it was a year later, but I fucking loved Follow the Leader by Korn. I loved Limp Bizkit. I loved Deftones. And honestly, like, it's kind of interesting because just this last week, I kind of got back into listening to Limp Bizkit.
Oh, yeah.
Who are a bad band. Really bad songs. Yeah, but
fun as shit, though.
And some of those fucking guitar riffs, dude, Limp Bizkit. If Wes Borland had, you lift him and put him in a fucking mosh metal band, favorite band. Yeah.
It would rock. Yeah. It's like, take Fred Durst out of it. Limp Bizkit releasing a fucking instrumental album would be they go explosions in the sky. That would absolutely bang. Metal. Yeah. I mean, that's the funny thing about music, saving you from things. Cause I kind of had not the same, very similar. Cause when I was in year nine, when I arrived at high school, the Tony Hawk wave was coming to an end and people were into fucking Ice Cube.
Yeah.
The fucking Up in Smoke tour. Every year you would get a rumor that Up in Smoke was coming to Australia, and it was Canberra only, and it was called Still Smoking. And that rumor would hit every year that Dre and M were coming. But I was still sticking with the pop punk stuff, and Limp Bizkit were around. I got a little bit into them, but it's one of those ones that they were so popular and you can't escape it. And I had the albums, but I never quite vibed the whole way through the album. And then in 2004, I found myself at a crossroads where I started listening to Franz Ferdinand, The Strokes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But then Hoobastank.
Hoobastank.
And it's I had those first two Hoobastank records. And
they had
two
records.
I think they've got three or four.
Oh my God.
But then, so I was heavy into Hoobastank. Loved Incubus, man. And then the emo scene swept me away from that.
Yeah.
And so as soon as I heard Tell All Your Friends, the fucking Hoobastank records go at the bottom of my car and never get listened to again.
Yeah.
Then it's all about
It's interesting how bands like Hoobastank and Incubus would trade on the image of the underground scene.
Yeah.
I think Hoobastank did trade a little bit on the image of fucking emo a little bit. And do you remember that band Taproot? They were a real second or third tier.
No, I don't.
But they were the same. They were we look like an emo band.
Yeah.
But they were just...
Yeah.
It was post-Glassdoor shit. Because you know how Glassdoor also straddled that line? They were part of the nu metal scene, but they were from the hardcore scene.
Totally. Yeah, weird. I mean, Glassdoor are a perfect example of we can be either, but we are this.
We came from this. It's again, it's where you come from. So much of it is where you come from. That determines your legitimacy.
Yeah.
But also, when I was in the hardcore scene in Brisbane in 2006, no one was talking about Glassdoor. No one was talking about Refuse. They could care less.
Yeah, right.
In terms of looking back on past bands, it was more Good Riddance. Because Good Riddance, they were they're a melodic punk band, but they're they have this edge enough to make them hardcore as well.
Sure.
Bad Religion, all that sort of stuff. Yeah.
That's interesting. I wonder why then they'd be you'd ignore a band like Glassdoor. Is it because it's too posery or
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's kind of it.
So poserism is a huge thing and
you can't be a poser, dude.
Yeah,
be a poser. The thing that's very funny about it though, at least I was only in Brisbane, I was 21, whatever. But what was big at that time was the fucking Orange County mosh scene. So it was Throwdown, 18 Visions, Bleeding Through.
Yeah.
You want to talk about fucking poser shit, dude? how much time do you spend putting on your eyeliner? You know what I mean?
That's a shame. The whole scene around...
Refuse, that's poser shit. You got to listen to 18 Visions.
2006, the guyliner, girl jeans thing took off. And that spawned... the haircut bands.
Totally.
And the ones that... But Fall Out Boy wore
girl jeans
eyeliner
so
and girl jeans.
Girl
and Fall Out Boy fucking rock. They make good pop punk. And My Chemical Romance, obviously. And I find when there's true artistry on hand, you can see it kind of shining through.
Yeah.
Especially if I when you compare, we'll take it all the way back to like Escape the Fate, who I'm bashing for no reason continually.
No, but they're a good reference point. There's so many bands like that, but I can't think of any other names.
Yeah.
So
let's just say, I mean, that's
Escape
ton of
the
them.
Fate as an avatar.
Escape the Fate, like, yeah, as a genre for that, when people are like, oh, like, hey, I'm listening to this band. They're called Escape the Fate. They sound like your favorite band, Thursday. And like then you're just like,
no, I don't.
Yeah, because you're like, there's no fucking artistry in
just
here. Like
incel rage.
Like yeah, and like they know how to craft like a song pop wise, but like they're not talking about anything.
Yeah.
And then like people are like, and then like people are like, well, who cares? They're just shouting everything.
Yeah. That's very interesting. That's very, because like you go through the same thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
At every stage, someone's going through the same thing.
I think like, yeah. And it's also like a difference between like casual fans and people who get into shit.
Yeah.
And I have always been a guy that gets into shit. Like
if
I like something, I'm online. I'm finding out all the like spider web of who is similar, what everything is.
It's so hard to do. I've fallen out of that. And then like there's new bands I really like that I wanted to talk about on an episode. Like new young bands that I really like. And it's so like, if you're not just doing that as part of your lifestyle, it's so hard to get back into it.
Unfortunately, the spiderweb thing kind of like stops dead when you're 25, 26.
And then
you still do that with shit you like.
Yeah.
But like with newer stuff, it's hard. So like I was that way with like Japanese role playing games, like
TV shows
like Buffy and like, and this is like, you get into it.
Yeah.
And when someone can't tell the difference between, you know, something like Full Collapse and a haircut band you get upset, but then you're also part of the problem for like,
but I said this last week, I said this to Jackson, there's something about like in like just investing in it, like you it's just like time spent with the art, because that develops your sense of taste, and then it's like it is an abstract thing, and it's hard to tell someone who's coming to you being like, oh, Escape the Fate, they sound like Thursday, and you'd be like, no, they don't.
Yeah,
it is hard to do that, but like the longer that person listens to that type of music, longer that person goes back in time, like you did, they will realize that's what I did with nu metal. I'm like, oh this is bad. But at the time I'm like, no, this rocks.
I had someone like this week who I love, a very good friend of mine, recommend me a band that is like a smaller band out of Boston. He was like, this is great. Like, you should check it out. It's like post-hardcore-y, curry, pop punk. It sounds kind of like Thursday. I listened to like the whole album and I was just like, this sounds like Senses Fail. And it's like, I also don't mind Senses Fail, but like immediately I was... But like if you played my wife Senses Fail and Thursday one after the other, she'd be like, oh, the same album?
Yeah, same band. Literally same band. Yeah.
So you have to be a fucking dork, really.
You got to be. That's the Faustian bargain. You get to listen to cool music, but you do not get to be cool yourself.
But I imagine that's the same thing with everyone. Like,
totally.
Do you meet people occasionally who are just like, oh yeah, I like music. I'll listen to anything, and then they kind of vex me a little.
Yeah.
Because you're like, but there's nothing you're obsessed with, and they're
what
like
about the culture. Of
no,
it,
I'll like pop what's on, like Triple J, fucking Shuckers, and you're just like, oh,
people who. I think this is like an old thought, but like I've definitely said this in the past. It's like, it's people who really like, it's like art versus decoration. Like you either treat music like art, like a museum, or you treat music like, you know, a $40 print from IKEA that you just want to hang on your wall to make your house look nice.
Yeah.
And it's fine.
Yeah.
Because like music is, ostensibly, it exists for enjoyment.
Yes, absolutely.
So if it's a casual enjoyment, that is just as legitimate as being a fucking dork like you and me.
Yeah. But at the time, it's infuriating.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, absolutely.
But then, like, those people, they have other stuff where they're like, how are you so casual about this?
I'm trying to kind of do a bit about this, about how, like, punk rock is just improv comedy.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? Like, it is. Like, we're just all dorks. We're just all dorks. And, like, there's these... Because I was a guest at this... improv comedy show, as like a monologist or whatever, and then they would act out the scenes. And backstage with the performers, they were just like all vibrating. I'm like, oh, you need this.
Yeah.
And I relate to it. I understand exactly what you're going through.
Absolutely. I think there is, like, you'll find comedians are obsessive about things. Like, they're very rare to find a comic who's just like, yeah, I like stuff. It's casual. And occasionally they are exceptionally good, but most of the people who are like good and work hard, get obsessive about totally. Things. Yeah, absolutely. Whether it be comedy, where it be movies, music, art, books, all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm definitely in that.
I think comedy is good for meeting dorks. But then, like, also, you meet dorks. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Yeah. And you do need to get out of here. You need, like, I think everyone does need, like, a casual interest. Like, I guess my casual interest is video games. It's like,
I love playing
video games, but I'm not like, oh, this developer did this, blah, 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 blah. And this like, fucking character designer did this and blah. I know shit all about it. Just, like, tell me which ones are good.
Yeah, right. Maybe that's me with books, then.
Yeah, books a little bit as books well. I'm obsessive about books, actually.
Yeah, books...
I love authors.
But man, maybe then I am because I fucking like have like 4 Wikipedia articles open about like shit I should check out. So, you know, maybe it's just like you can't, if I like something, I can't not be nerdy.
You care
about
it. Yeah, yeah.
And then like finding the subculture.
Yeah.
Fucking for a suburban kid who like was writing like Buffy fan fiction and putting it on like online.
That's amazing. Talking all right, let's look that up right now.
I wish Jamie it still Kirk existed, Buffy dude. But like, you know, you find people online, you're like, man, that guy's from the UK. That guy's... And then like finding a group of people who are like, man, I could talk about this all day long.
Yeah,
and
you're just like,
all right. Then you have 16 beers. All of a sudden, I'm right in your face, Ryan. I'm repeating the same story about full collapse. You're going home, man. You're going home saying...
We've had 14 beers at Alex White's Bucks and your forehead is against my forehead.
You're going home to your partner being like, Jamie's a bit intense. And I'm going home being like, Ryan gets me.
I think we're best friends. Oh, man. Well, yeah, should we wrap it up?
Yeah, it's
we've done
like,
a good amount of time. But
it's mostly a big breakdown about being dorky.
Yeah, I think the story of Shape to Punk to Come is, that, like, for guys our age, is the story of how we got into punk and hardcore.
Actually, that's a great, like, through line. Like, it's an album, it's a gateway to dorkism.
Absolutely it absolutely
like,
is.
If you want to be a dork about this shit, that's where you start.
Yeah, I can't understand how, similar to Goldfinger as well, like, it got me into politics a little bit as well.
Right.
Yeah,
that would be a cool Apple Music, Spotify playlist to make. Like, are you thinking about becoming, like, a young, budding, post-hardcore emo dork?
Yeah.
Here's 20 tracks that'll fucking send you, like, Wikipedia-ing.
Yeah, this will send you down the rabbit hole,
baby. You'll start talking about VFW halls in New Jersey after that.
Even though you're a kid from Earlwood.
Yeah. You'll start saying things like, me and Jeff, Rickley.
Rickley.
Yeah. Me and Daryl, Palumbo. Ever heard of him?
Awesome, man. So, do you have anything to plug? Doing any festivals?
Well, listen to Community Notice Board.
Yeah, listen to Community Notice Board, absolutely. Join the Patreon.
It's kind of like a podcast where we talk about where people grew up and then like various subcultures too. So, there is a lot of dorky shit in it, a lot of good research, a lot of fun stories, true crime, scandals, weirdos, all that kind of stuff. And we have a Patreon.
Yeah, join the Patreon for Community Notice Board. That's one of my favorite podcast to
Thank
do
you.
Yeah as be a guest on
we love having you on
yeah as for me I've got a festival show coming up. It's called 13 Jokes. If you're in Sydney, it's May 8th and May 10th at the Factory Theatre. Please come. My Instagram is ryan.d.sim. You got dead_ramones, just search Dead Ramones to follow us there. Also, Rat Club comedy show every Monday night at Mosh Pit. Sorry, I'm looking at you, Jamie. I know you already know this and are not going to come. I'm talking to the people listening. Mosh Pit Bar, Erskineville. Come every Monday night, every single Monday night. Come there. And I think that's everything I have to say. Any closing remarks?
Yeah, they say the classics never go out of style. But they do.